This is Aranax. This is the podcast about the transformation of the shipping, maritime and ocean space. It's powered by Fathom World, and I'm your host, Craig Eason. At Fathom World, and with this new podcast, Aranax, we look at the huge developments facing our oceans and the main economies that rely on it. And we look at how regulations, societal pressure, and importantly, scientific and technological endeavours that are shaping its future. And that's what I'm interested in. After a career at sea, navigating ocean-going vessels of various types, and after a spell as a broadcast journalist, and now having spent 15 years as a maritime journalist, I've decided to bring this all together in the shape of a new podcast. So what do I want to do with this podcast? Well, not only do I want to show those outside shipping that this is an industry that is capable of changing and is changing, I also want to show those in the industry how this change is happening and the challenges and opportunities that exist. So Aranax is about telling the story of this transformation and change. It's going to be about the digitalization of shipping's tools. It's going to be about the opportunities that arise, such as with startups that seem to have sprung up out of the blue. Excuse the pun. I also want to use Aranax to shine a light on the environmental issues within the industry, and I want to put my efforts into looking at the people who make this industry tick and grow. And if you're wondering about the name, I've taken it from the Jules Verne novel 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Pierre Aranax being the storyteller in the novel who describes the great wonders, the people, and the inventions he sees. So, for my first episode, I'm going to look at two completely different corners of shipping in the space of 15 minutes. On the one hand, we have a rather unusual idea that may be just as mad as it seems, or it may be an unusual idea that could become reality. This idea is to take CO2 emissions from ocean-going ships, freeze them, shake them into giant spears, and shoot them down through the deep water of the ocean into the seafloor. Ivar Moltke is the Danish inventor behind the idea, and I'll be talking to him later. But first, let's look at those giant engines on board ships. They are huge. Sometimes they're called cathedral engines, and they need a lot of fuel to provide the power to push hundreds of thousands of tons of ship and cargo through the water. But just like the rest of society, shipping is set to decarbonise, and do so dramatically. So these ships with these giant engines need a cleaner fuel. Now there's a lot of debate about which fuel and which ones have the power density to do it. So this is the reason I went to Man Energy Solutions in Copenhagen. Man Energy Solutions was until recently known as Man Diesel and Turbo, changing its name as it published its own ideas of its energy transition. Man itself is a giant company owned by a giant company, the Volkswagen Group, so a simple sounding thing like a name change is really no simple thing. But this impending challenge is one of the reasons Man Diesel and Turbo changed its name to Man Energy Solutions. So I went to Copenhagen to write a report for Fathom World on the new Man strategy. It was there that I met with Brian Ostergaard Sorensen, who is the group's head of two-stroke research and development in Copenhagen. It's his job to look at all the possible fuels and to use the MAN network to find out how to convert the group's portfolio to meet them. I started by asking him how he thought this energy transition is going to start.
Some of the fuels that will be part of this transition towards 2050 and a decarbonized world, they are already here. So when I look at LNG, for example, LNG is today a proven fuel. I know today it's fossil based, but you could imagine a future where it will be bio LNG, it will be synthetic LNG. So from an engine perspective, that is actually, you can say, it does not really matter what type, how it's generated, the fuel, because the molecule is the same. So we see various types of fuels already today, as mentioned. And then we see new types emerging. There is today a lot of talk in the industry about ammonia. Hydrogen to a certain degree, but ammonia is interesting, even though it's poisonous, it's interesting from a handling point of view on board. So we are also looking into how would ammonia affect our engine portfolio. What would we need to do as a technology provider to be ready in case the market would go in that direction. Hydrogen, we believe we could also see that as a potential, maybe a little further out. There are different challenges around handling it operationally on board the vessel. So we think that will maybe decide how fast the uptake is of utilizing pure hydrogen on board.
A lot of what you're doing then, and a lot of these discussions about fuels, rely on the discussions at the IMO and elsewhere having a complete life cycle perspective of the fuels. In other words, whether they are actually made in a sustainable way, so that by the time those fuels are burnt in the engine on the ship and the emissions come out of the engine, that they are considered low CO2 emissions. So there's a carbon neutrality there. That's going to be an important factor moving forward then. How would you counter that if the IMO comes out and decides it only wants to take a tank to wake perspective, i.e. only looking at the emissions that come out of the fuel?
So you can say today we for the two-stroke part we supply technology that is sort of based on board. And then we are looking into abatement technologies of the exhaust fumes. So there we are catering for the from tank to wake, you can say, technology. As MAN Energy Solutions, we are looking into the well to tank part of it as well, where we are looking into hydrogen. We are looking into power to X capabilities. That is in other areas of the company. So we are trying to have that holistic approach. How do we actually move towards a decarbonized world? So that is a perspective we have within the company.
What's your take then on CO2 abatement on board the ship? Are there the technologies, do you perceive there being the technologies that could be used on board vessels to effectively remove the CO2 from the emissions?
I think the cost today is too high, and one could argue would it be more efficient to actually do it at a larger central plant and not having maybe 100 or 1,000 smaller plants out sailing. Those are some of the discussions that has been in the shipping industry. So carbon capture technology is there today. It's still not fully mature, and I think the cost today is extremely high. So I think it will develop, but we also see fuel today like ammonia, for example, that where you basically you don't have a carbon molecule. You have LNG where you are reducing CO2 emissions already. So there are different fuels in the transition towards decarbonization of the maritime industry.
So with that in mind, in terms of the range of fuels that we're looking at potentially coming into the industry, how are you as head of R&D in the two-stroke business looking at your engine portfolio and preparing those to actually meet whatever might emerge in the industry? Because at the end of the day, we might find that it isn't one fuel suits everybody. There might be a whole different range of fuels, and that must make your job more exciting and complex, but for the ship owner, a lot more daunting in terms of the choices they've got to make.
Yeah. So basically, what we have done is we are building different technology platforms that can cater for what I call different clusters of fuel. So we have a platform that can burn these gaseous type of fuel. We have a platform that can burn liquid gas fuel, and then we have you can say liquid burning engines. So we're trying to develop a portfolio of engines that with very very small modifications can actually burn different type of fuel within the same platform. And that could be from a retrofit perspective, where you are basically able to rebuild your engine to burn some of the new fuel types we might see. So you choose one technology today, but you have a platform that you can adjust to some of the new fuel types we see are entering the market. That is how we try and future-proof the engine portfolio.
And how about with some of these fuels, the actual containment on board the vessel? With LNG, obviously, it's known that you need a pressurized tank, the energy capacity of the LNG in that tank is a lot less than conventional fuels. So there is that energy density that has to be considered. So how are the other fuels stored on board, and what considerations do you have to take when thinking about the fuel supply into the engine?
Yeah, so we try and have a holistic approach to, you know, when for example, we have, as you mentioned, LNG, could be ammonia, could be methanol. Then we have a holistic view. We have a department here looking at ship integration, the ship supply system. And then we say, you know, that part is often the shipyard or a ship designer that is designing that part. And then we say, how do we then get it into our engine? What would we need? What would the specification be for getting the fuel into the combustion chamber and then combust it in the most efficient way, making sure that we have the least NOx production? Can we do something around the sulfur content? And the more efficient, you can say, the less energy you also need from an operational point of view. And by that, also minimize within the technical boundaries the CO2 emission of that particular fuel at this stage.
Very soon you're going to be starting a new test engine, a second test engine here in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Why have you done that? Why are you bringing in a second test engine?
But it's actually to go back into all the new fuel types you mentioned in the beginning, and we see there is a need to do more testing of these new types coming in, and we want to be more efficient in the way we utilize our time. So we will be able to test and then rebuild to a different configuration on the other, and then vice versa. So you can say test uptime, if we can call it that, will be higher, and we will be able basically to test more of the interesting configurations we know we will have to do for these future technologies.
That was Brian Ostergaard Sørensen at Man Energy Solutions headquarters in Copenhagen, talking about how the group is looking at future fuels and the construction of a new test engine that will be adding to the existing engine in the city. But what if shipping cannot wean itself off fossil fuels, or even if it turns out that using biofuels or these power-to-X fuels, they still need to do something with their CO2 emissions? There has been a lot of talk and development in carbon capture and storage, or sequestration. There has been recent developments with regulations that pave the way for work in storing CO2 underground, such as using depleted oil and gas reserves under the seafloor. That's good for heavy industry perhaps, but not so easy for shipping to store its CO2 on board and discharge it ashore for delivery into a CCS system. But one inventor in Copenhagen has found another idea that may be part of the solution. As improbable as it sounds, Ivar Moltke believes deep sea shipping could quite conceivably take the CO2 out of a ship's emissions, freeze it, shape it into a projectile, and drop it from the ship into the seafloor of the deep oceans. He's formed Decarbon Ice. It's one of the projects being backed by the Danish Maritime Development Centre and has the backing of some very influential ship owners, a shipyard, and some technology companies that have been convinced not only by the science, but by the physical properties of CO2 in the deep oceans. So, following my visit to Man Energy Solutions in Copenhagen, I set off to visit Ivar Moltke in his home in the leafy outskirts of Copenhagen, where I sat down with a cup of tea to hear how he thinks such an idea as dropping frozen CO2, which is called dry ice, could work. I started by asking him how he came up with the idea.
Yeah, actually, the idea was in an ICCP report. It was just like one sentence in the report, but it caught my imagination, and I went into trying to make this into reality. It's actually a report which is 13 years old, and nobody seems to have been working on it since, so it was pure luck.
What about that part of the report, what about this particular suggestion made you think that it could be applied to ships' emissions?
Yeah, the original idea was to take CO2 from power stations ashore and sail them into the ocean and dump them. But I was looking for an easy solution for storing CO2 from ships, because on a ship, if you catch all the CO2 on a container ship going from China to Europe, it's about 10,000 tons. So it's a huge amount of CO2. So we didn't want to bring all this CO2 ashore and store it. We wanted to find a solution on the voyage to store the CO2.
Obviously, it's an idea that's in its infancy at the moment, so there's a lot of steps that you're going to go through to be able to bring this idea to anything close to reality. And I know you've got a consortium of very large ship owners and technology companies now that are actually seeing some value in this concept. But what are the key challenges that you see to getting even a demonstration project?
The process is composed from the capture. I think the capture process is fairly commercial available, so I think not so difficult. There's very little knowledge about the strengths and the friction and all kind of mechanical properties of dry ice made like ice cubes, because usually dry ice is made as powder and compacted into solids, which is
and dry ice is the frozen CO2. Yes. The idea is that using existing technology, you'd be able to condense the exhaust, extract the CO2 as a liquid, and then freeze it, but freeze it in a way that would make it a hard ice-like consistency.
Yes.
And not as a powder-like consistency like you might find with snow.
Yeah, because nowadays there's used a lot of CO2, actually several hundred million tons a year of CO2 for like soft drinks and beer. And a lot of it is used as dry ice for cooling in the process of making foods like ice cream and things like that. So it's a fairly common material in the industry, but we have a slightly different approach, because we want it also to be very strong so that it will survive the process of going from the ship into the seabed.
Well, let's look at that process in a bit of detail then. So you, on board the ship, you're going to form a kind of arrow or projectile shape out of the dry ice and drop it out of the ship. Will it go straight down into the seabed? And what makes you think that it will stay in the seabed?
Yeah, it actually moves quite fast downwards, because it's very streamlined. So it's the gravity of the densified CO2 is it's about 60% heavier than water. So it'll drop. It's like concrete. If you drop concrete into the ocean, so it will catch speed and it will hit the seafloor at a speed of about 20 meters per second, which is quite fast. It's 70 kilometers an hour. So
but if I dropped, or if I threw an ice cube at a wall at that kind of speed, I would expect the ice cube to shatter. So why would your frozen dry ice, when it hits the seafloor, not do something similar?
It's because the seafloor is not very compacted. It's like the top layer of the very deep sea, not the kind of sea we have in the North Sea and so on. But if you get into the very deep ocean areas, the seafloor is actually almost liquids. So it's 80% water in the top layers, so it hits something which is like porridge or something, very, very soft, and then it gradually gets less soft as the water is pushed out by the weight of the sediments. So within maybe the first 50 meters of the sediments, they get from something very liquid into something which is like a beach. And we only need the top part of that sediments for the storage.
And what makes you think then that it will stay there? You've got this frozen CO2 shaped like a rocket or a spear or a javelin that's gone down into the seabed. Sure, it's sat there in the seabed, but anything could happen to it then.
Yeah, it. You know, the dry ice is extremely cold, so When it comes into the seabed, it will start melting, but it's still very cold when it's melted. It's minus 60 centigrade. So when it mix with water, it makes hydrates. Hydrates is kind of a mix of CO2 and water, which turns into an ice. And this kind of ice has a melting point of 10 centigrade instead of 0 centigrade as ordinary ice, which means that when it is in the ocean, which is at that depth as 4 to 5 centigrade, then it will not melt. We need to heat the ocean another 6 degrees in order to melt it. So it will stay ice, this special kind of hydrate ice, within the sediments. And as a kind of second line of defense, we expect to use areas of the seabed where the CO2 is heavier than water. If we go below 2,800 meters depth, CO2 is heavier than water, and it will sink into the sediments instead of rising into the ocean. So this way, even a leakage from our deposits will not mean that we make the ocean more acid.
Obviously, we're looking at this concept being used on only very large international ships. Have you looked at how those shipping lanes pass over those geographical areas where you think it'd be suitable to drop the ice into the water?
Yes. There are all kind of obstacles on the seafloor. There's areas where the water is too shallow. There are areas where there are mountains and trenches. There are areas where there are volcanoes and lava at the bottom and so on. We'll need some kind of storage on board the ship to bridge the gaps. There will be shallow areas. There will be mountains. There will be all kind of obstacles. There will also be some man-made obstacles like ocean communication cables and pipelines and things like that. So the intention is to make a kind of approved storage area where we don't disturb habitats for sea life. We don't disturb man-made structures. We don't try to deposit places where the sediments are too strong. We don't go to the continental slope because we don't want to make any risk of disturbing the balances.
That was Ivar Moltke, the Danish inventor and entrepreneur behind Decarbonize concept, explaining the physics of dropping spears of dry ice or frozen CO2 from large ships into the seafloor of the deep ocean. That's it for this episode of Aranax. Our future episodes will include a continued examination of some of the new and fascinating technologies that are reshaping our maritime space. And next week, I'll be talking to the International Chamber of Shipping about their proposal to create a research and development fund to help pave the way for this decarbonised shipping industry. I'm Craig Eason from Fathom World. Thank you for listening. Remember to sign up for updates, and goodbye for now.